Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board for the City of Morro Bay. Today is Thursday, October 2nd, 2014. Please let the record show that we do have quorum. Everyone's here except our fishing representative. And we'll start off with a moment of silence. Thank you, and we'll now move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we'll now move on to chair and advisory board member announcements and presentations. And I think before we go to the actual announcements, I'm going to start off with a presentation because I've got something here in front of me that is very special for one of our family members of the Harbor Department. And as you know, the City of Morro Bay gives out pins in recognition of anniversary dates for different employees for the city. So I feel privileged to be able to hand this one out tonight. I feel fortunate to be able to do this and proud to. So in the Harbor Department, we have an anchor that has been there now for 15 years. She's seen a fair amount of transition in the last five, but she has been consistent in terms of a smile and always meeting requests, regardless of what they are or sometimes how crazy they are. So I don't know how she does it with such a smile all the time, but she does. So if the audience would please join me in recognizing Polly Curtis for 15 years of service. Give her a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Polly, and congratulations. We appreciate your service. All right, now we will move on to other announcements by
a sense of what we want to put here for a marine facility and what you guys want. So if you haven't done so, please do so. Thank you. All it is asking you information about where you haul out, what size boat you have, what things you like to have done, whether you need to store a boat, any of that kind of information. We'll take all that data in and then go from there. Thank you.
And I believe Dana, there's also a link on the City of Morro Bay website that anyone from the public can go to as well. So that's an easy way to get to it. Yeah, good.
And you can pick up these surveys at the Harbor Office also.
Okay. So many ways to get those in, and we'd appreciate your input on those as well. Ron? All right, that concludes Chair and Advisory Board Member announcements and presentations. We will now move on to the public comment period. And what we ask for public comment, and this is according to the city's procedure, is public comment at this point in the meeting is for anything that's not on the agenda. So public comment in a general nature. If you'd like to comment on something specific, I think some of you are here for the liveaboard ordinance, we would ask that you wait until that agenda item comes up. If you can't stay, if you need to leave before that item comes up, because that'll take us about 25 minutes or so to get there, then you can come up now at this point and give your public comment.
Greetings. So, you too. So Michael the Bear Rowland.
Your name and city of residence, please.
Yeah. Michael the Bear Rowland. Right. I live on my boat in Morro Bay. Hopefully a lot longer than I plan on. I came before you guys before about a controversy with the Harbor Patrol. Becca was here. Sir Eric wasn't. Right. I thought I got it all taken care of. I paid the bills. When I went in the office the other day, he said absolutely not. He would let me have my boat with outboard on it because it was a scab. I'm old and ugly. My boat's old and ugly. We're not going to sink. Okay? If we need to deal with that, we'll deal with that later. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bear. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing no further comments at this time, public comment period is closed. We'll move on to item A, the consent calendar, which is the approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held last month, September 4th, 2014. Are there any changes or corrections that need to be made to the minutes as presented? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion to approve. Moved by Lynn, seconded by Jean. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes for the Harbor Advisory Board for September 4th, 2014, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. And now item B on the agenda, public hearings, reports, and appearances, our Harbor Department status report from Eric Endersby, our Harbor Director.
Thank you and good evening. And congratulations, Polly. I think she started as a temp. She had about 6 months in as a temp before she got part-time, full-time, and I think she worked two jobs, and she's up in IT and working with us for a while, and then eventually we got her full-time. So Polly's been here a long time. Congratulations. Hopefully she'll be here a lot longer. So quite a bit to report on updates here for the Harbor Department. I'll try to be brief as possible. North T Pier maintenance, largely done. Replaced 75-odd piles, did a fair amount of major abutment work right where the pavement meets the pilings. That's all done, meets the wood. Really one piling left underneath the Coast Guard shed that takes a special epoxy wrap that Associated is waiting for some lower tides to be able to get to. And then removal of a couple piles and reinstallation of ladders that went out for repair. So we're just about done on that. Still pretty well on budget. We went back to council a couple times for some additional funding. We're still within that budget, extra budget amount. So we'd hope to be done by Harborfest weekend, but looks like Harborfest weekend's here. So the Harbor Festival isn't incorporating the pier, hadn't planned on it, whether we were working on it or not. They just didn't incorporate the North T Pier this year. So not an issue, but we're still missing the use of that south leg, but hopefully that's not much longer. Recent city council action. September 10th, with input from the Harbor Advisory Board, the city council unanimously voted to oppose the proposed Dynegy Wave Parks. We heard that back in September 10th. You considered it and what Dynegy was proposing with these wave parks offshore. City council obviously took that Harbor Advisory Board input to heart, as well as a lot of input from the public. A lot of people spoke and really hinged on earlier Dynegy's contacts with the city and the fishermen and what they were proposing to do versus what suddenly showed up in the Federal Register was quite a bit different from what we had been led to believe. So city council wrote a letter in unanimous opposition, and the city attorney also filed a request to intervene. Approval of an area in concept for the museum, that's generally the Front Street parking lot, and then later on approval of an MOU, which kind of spelled out the city's and the Maritime Museum's understanding of how they believe the process should go forward. The Maritime Museum is proposing to put another boat down on the Front Street parking lot. Part of the process to do that is putting it in the Front Street right away. The Front Street actually does come down the road there, come down the bluff on paper. Obviously, doesn't come down the road in reality right out here, but it's actually out there on paper, and where the Maritime Museum is proposing to put these new vessels, or the third vessel, is in the Front Street right away, and the operative mechanism for that, and the existing vessels, at least one of the existing vessels is in that right away. The operative mechanism for that was an encroachment permit. Part of the MOU has the city abandoning the Surf Street right-of-way, which is a common practice of cities to get rid of paper streets if they're never going to use them. So if they abandon that right-of-way, the Surf Street right-of-way, that encroachment permit, which allows the Maritime Museum to encroach upon the right-of-way, kind of disappears because there's no more right-of-way. So we're going to enter into a license agreement, which will re-spell out the things in the MOU that are operative, as well as allow them to display three vessels. I know there's concerns out there about loss of parking. As you know, we do see a lot more folks around here these days, and parking is getting pretty full at times. Even in the middle of winter, we seem to fill up our parking lots on a lot of weekends. They're going to rearrange vessels a little bit. The Coast Guard boat will end up going over in the dirt between the existing driveway right next to where the boats are and the driveway that goes into the triangle lot in the parking, into the power plant. So that's where the third vessel will go. The Coast Guard vessel will go. And then they're going to bring in the Alma And our intent is to get them tight enough to where we don't lose any additional parking. The Alma isn't that much longer than that 30-odd foot Coast Guard boat, and hopefully we can get them faced in there and facing each other in such a way that we don't lose any more parking. So that's going to happen. We're going to start negotiating that license agreement here fairly soon, hopefully in the next couple of months, and then the Maritime Museum will get a crane and start rearranging things. Coastal Cleanup Day, pretty successful down at Bayshore Bluffs Park, as well as the rest of the city. I never have heard the final outcome of the amount of debris removed. I know the Coastal Commission and the local coastal cleanup folks like to take a tabulation and estimate how much poundage and how much volume they bring off the beaches. I haven't heard those numbers yet. We removed just over 50 skiffs. A lot of just pure derelict, falling apart junk, fair amount of tires, fair amount of just metal rubbish down in the water. There's actually an old car frame down there. I'm not sure what kind of car it was or vehicle that's now gotten exposed. That beach used to have a lot of oyster shell and a lot of dirt up above the oyster shell, and it's been eroded away over the last 5, 6, 7 years, and it's starting to expose a lot of stuff underneath the ground there. So that car frame, unfortunately, is going to take a lot more than a small boat to remove. It's probably going to take a crane of some sort. But we've got a lot of boats out of there. A lot of folks marked their boats as requested and signed up with us or registered with us, gave us their information. We've got pictures of them. And a fair amount of them we ended up taking into our yard. A lot of people have already come and claimed them. And the rest will eventually go to auction after a certain amount of time. And when we get around to an auction, probably, I'm going to guess springtime at this rate, but you never know. But we'll put that out in the paper and let the Harbor Advisory Board know in an upcoming meeting when we have that auction, because I know people like to try and come down and see what sort of treasures we have. So, if folks keep boats down there, we ask that they, if they store them permanently, they're marked with ownership information, they're stored and registered with the Harbor Department, that they're in some sort of an operable condition, not just you don't want it in your backyard and it really doesn't float and you're never going to use it, so you put it down there. We'd really request that they be boats that are used occasionally and in usable shape. Not the falling apart condition that a lot of them were in. A lot of boats were just flat out dumped down there. And then if they're required to be registered, which some of them are, depending on length and whether or not they've got motors, that they have DMV registration. And nothing else down there. I mean, we don't mind a minimal wood storage rack if you want to get it up off of the ground. There's some pretty elaborate stuff down there that we did remove. We are okay with, like, say, very minimal storage type racks. But no carpeting. I mean, we pulled out, a good couple hundred square feet of carpeting, a few hundred square feet of carpeting that people had laid down, which we can understand that you don't want to drag your skiff across the oysters, but laying old shag carpeting on the ground and just letting it rot and go off into the water isn't the way to do it either. So no carpeting. If you want carpeting, you can bring it down, keep it at home, roll it out when you need to put your boat in the water, and roll it back when you go away. So hopefully that beach will look and stay cleaner for a little longer. We used to have a road leading down there. If you've been around, Lynn, you've probably been around down there long enough, and Dana, there's or Thresher. That's long since gone, but a lot of the netting and other gear types that would typically entangle sharks are now either severely limited or gone, so they're not being caught anymore, and they're really on the rebound. And just interesting seeing their numbers and their analysis of why we're not seeing a huge increase in attacks on people. There's mistaken identity theories, there's people don't taste good theories, lots of different theories out there, but they don't really have a handle on it. But just, I guess the good part is that they don't bite people very often. But, they're out there. We got to share the ocean, and we're sharing it with more of them. So just be aware of your surroundings. September 6th, there's a combination Dahlia Days, which the city's been doing for a good number of years. The Dahlia is the city's official flower. This year is combined with the Historic Founders Day Parade on the 6th. With the assistance of the Central Coast Women for Fisheries, we towed one of our boats down the road, down Main Street, decorated nicely with sort of some flowing water-looking stuff dangling around it, and had the fishery gals there with us helping with just going down through the parade. So we did win the Best Float Award, which was nice. I didn't personally wasn't down there, so I didn't see what the other floats were, but sounds like there's a fair amount of people and had good weather. September 8th, I think at the last meeting, I reported on the upcoming Never Quit Challenge. That's a Never Quit Challenge. It happens all around, in one place all around the country, It's for military veterans to and for wounded at war veterans to participate in different sorts of challenges. Sometimes they're water-based, sometimes they're land-based, sometimes they're air-based and parachuting. They just do different and wild things every year to challenge themselves and really raise money for charity, for certain veterans charities. This year on the West Coast, it was a 600-mile jet ski run from here that started here with K-38, which is the folks that do our jet ski training, and ran down, made a stop in Port San Luis, made a stop down in Santa Barbara, over to Catalina, and then on down to San Diego. Raised a good amount of money, three-day event, and by all measures, it seemed like it was a success. They had success. They had good weather and no incidents that I was aware of. August 15th and 19th, if you were on the water, you might have noticed a lot of students paddling around. That was Cal Poly's Wow Week. We had a lot of kayakers, a lot of canoers, a lot of wowies just all over the place. As usual, I went and spoke to the Wow chaperones and leaders, give them a water safety talk after that drowning we had a few years ago, the tragic drowning of the Cal Poly student down at Montana de Oro at Spooner's Cove. Cal Poly wanted to up their game in terms of water safety and water training for their Wow leaders, so they invited us in Port San Luis in, and we go in and give them some basic water safety tips and try to remind them, you know, what to look out for and what not to look out for. So there was over 700 of those leaders that are there. It's pretty big and amazingly organized event. Upcoming events. David Buckingham, new city manager, was hired after an in-house recruitment by Ed Crines, our interim city manager. He started Monday. Like I said, I was gone most of this week in conference, so I haven't met him yet. He made the rounds to all the city departments on Monday. He's coming back to our department tomorrow, so I can meet and greet with him in, on Tuesday. He had, Tuesday the 30th, just this past Tuesday at 4 to 6, right here at the Vets Hall. He had a meet and greet with the community. I don't know if anybody attended that, but it seems he's got a family of five kids. They've got some acreage over in Tascadero, so they can spread out and spread out with their animals. And hopefully we'll get to meet him and learn about what his management style is. He comes out of the military, out of the Army, so should be good. We'll get some stability back. 33rd Annual Harbor Festival, right on top of us. They're already setting up down on the waterfront. They're pretty much business as usual. They've eliminated some of the, I think the big, huge seafood pavilion tent is gone. They're trying to downsize a little bit in that regard. They're still going to have seafood showcased and commercial fishing, but a little smaller. They've got a kids' cove area, a little enhanced kids' play area that will be down by our office, commercial fisherman's barbecue, a little wine and beer court, and a lot of live music throughout the weekend. So it looks like the weather's going to be phenomenal. Hopefully we don't get too much strong offshore winds that's going to play havoc with the tents, but we'll see how that goes. And then snowy plover season is officially over as of the 30th of September. State Parks called it quits a couple of weeks ago when they had no more active nests. Paul, do you know if they brought fencing down this week? Fencing came down off the sands pit. So you're free to roam freely on the sands pit again. That will go back up sometime in March with the new nesting season. And according to Parks, they had one of the most successful hatching. They basically track and mark, and every egg they know when it was laid, when it should hatch, when it does hatch, the chick that comes out of it. They do some banding, and then they try to track what happens, and they report that this year on the sand spit was one of the most successful years they've ever had. So whatever we're doing, it looks like it's working. And then finally, $2,000 a year, that went to the Harbor Fund. And then they did a community development agreement with the city that went to the general fund for $500,000 a year, that whether or not the power plant went through its rebuild, they were to pay to this community development fund $500,000 a year to go into the general fund to do community benefit type projects. The allegation was that community development grant $500,000 should have rightly gone into the Harbor Fund. Well, I would have enjoyed that extra $500,000. State Lands Commission investigated and they looked into it and they determined that no, that's separate. The license agreement or the lease agreement for the outfall properly goes into the Harbor Fund, and the development agreement was unrelated to the Tidelands Trust, where obviously the outfall is right in the Tidelands Trust. The power plant is not, so darn it, we didn't get that $500,000. And then there's been some complaints to the city council that, and again, we're here about liveaboards, residential use typically in our Tidelands Trust area is not allowed by the State Lands Commission. You cannot live in a home on the waterfront in our lease sites. There are exceptions. The two exceptions are caretaker type uses and watchman type uses, and a lot of our lease sites now have caretaker units. The newest one, I'm just off the top, Anderson Inn, has a small caretaker's unit where a person is able to reside, but their primary purpose of their residence is to caretake that property and to be a manager of that property. That is allowed under State Lands Commission, as are liveaboards on vessels. The contention that the council was receiving was that liveaboards should not be allowed because they are residential use of Tidelands Trust properties. Well, liveaboards are looked at with the same sort of consideration, the same sort of treatment, that they are a safety and security caretaker type force, and that's why they're allowed. They must be regulated, as we are with our liveaboard ordinance, to 10% of the total boating population. So one of the allegations was that there was an attorney general ruling that said, no, that's not correct. That attorney general's ruling, and if you look at the paperwork that I provided, that attorney general's opinion was specific to a situation up in Redwood City where they had the big boats, or big houses that are actually, you know, true houses built on floats. And the attorney general determined or ruled that that was truly a residential and not a caretaker type use, and believed that that should get phased out. So it was unrelated. State Lands Commission, I contacted our staffer for State Lands and confirmed that no, liveaboards are an allowed use as long as they're regulated and you're not going over 10%. So that, I think, is the last of my status report. Any questions on all that?
Any questions or comments for Eric with regard to the report? No questions. Thank you, Eric. That concludes item B1. Our Harbor Department staff report, and that will take us on to item C, unfinished business. And item C1 is the review of the liveaboard ordinance regarding liveaboard permit inspections and marine surveyor requirements. And I would remind everybody that this topic is fairly specific to the ordinance with regard to the inspections and the marine surveyor requirements. If my recollection is correct, I think one of our astute members of the board questioned what qualified marine surveyor meant, the word qualified, and I think that's actually, that one question I think got us going on this path. And as a reminder for the way public comment will work on this topic, is we'll first hear the staff report from Eric, and then we will ask any questions of Eric as a board, and then we'll open it up to public comment. And we do it that way to give you, the public, the opportunity to hear the full report, to hear any questions that we vet out, and then you can give your public comment. If after we have extended discussion, we'll open up public comment again. So our objective as a board and the chair here is to get as much public comment as possible. We're all on the same side. And we want to do what's right for the bay and for our liveaboards as well. So we're in this together. With that, I will turn it over to Eric for the staff report on this item.
Thank you. So a lot of material in here, mostly attachments and appendices and less staff report. But as you said, Jeff, you know, we've heard this a couple times before, this item on the Harbor Advisory Board, and we're bringing it back again. November 2013, we had a report on the status of the liveaboards and the liveaboard permits, and during declaration of future agenda, Appendix B is a little bit of information on a professional marine surveyor and a definition of that. So what we really have is, you know, currently on our books, in our liveaboard ordinance, we inspect the vessel for having an MSD and having a few basic pieces of equipment if the vessel is operable and seaworthy. The liveaboard ordinance requires that the vessel is suitable for operation on waters of the Pacific Ocean. In terms of the inspection goes, you know, it's not a full-on marine survey. I don't think it was ever intended to be a full-on marine survey, but it is a judgment call by a professional of some sort, mostly up until we've had a local marine surveyor doing over the last few years. Up until that point, it was all the harbor department doing it. And we would do it based on our training and our expertise on a vessel. And again, it wasn't a survey. It was basically, I think, given our operable and seaworthy definitions and looking at a boat, and it's got the basic minimum equipment, the engine as designed operates, its masts are standing, it appears to be material in good condition, it becomes a judgment call of whether or not it's made way safely to its point of inspection and back. And that's about all we've had to work with. There's no definitions really in our in the Muni Code in terms of bearing down any deeper on operable and seaworthy. There is some things in Harbors and Nav Code in terms of an unseaworthiness definition. It's pretty scant. There's Harbors and Nav Code requirements for basic minimum safety equipment, life jackets, fire extinguishers, those sorts of things. But beyond that, we were left to our own devices to come up with what is a passing vessel and what is not a passing vessel. And then in terms of the marine surveyor, again, it just says acceptable to the city, to the harbor department, with no definition of what acceptable may be. It didn't say it had to be, you know, a surveyor that's, you know, a member of this, a member of that, or passes this or passes that. It just says acceptable. So what we're bringing back to the board is a sort of a smorgasbord, I guess, or buffet of potential areas that could possibly be incorporated into the liveaboard ordinance to try and better define what the inspection ought to be and better define what the marine surveyor acceptability may be. Various ways of skinning this cat. One is identify sort of some global areas of interest or some larger areas that the Harbor Advisory Board would like to see more research or specific type proposals brought back. Or the Harbor Advisory Board, if they see fit, to look at specific areas, whether it's in this report or other things that you may have, to specifically try to incorporate. Or, and I hate to bring up this word again, but I will, another ad hoc committee. I know we've got a few going now, which is, you know, we did a couple of ad hoc committees over the years for the liveaboard ordinance and a couple of revisions over the last two decades. That's certainly a possibility to get a little more focused attention to bring some more of the stakeholders in. To bring things back to the Harbor Advisory Board. So I'm not going to go into a ton of specifics on, you know, the appendices and the vessel safety and operable and you know, equipment requirements and everything that we've got in the appendices, just knowing that it's here and this is possible things to pull from and where the board wants to go and where we may want to see some emphasis, get some input from the public. We've got the liveaboard code, the municipal code itself, in the staff report as well, and the inspection form. I've got our harbor rules and regulations as well, if we need to pull that up. So a fair amount of material, so I will turn it back to the board and see where you want to take it.
Thank you, Eric. And I'll remind the board members again, this is for questions, so to illuminate any areas that you need illuminated. Not for discussion. We'll hear public comment before we go into actual discussion on it. I do have one question for you, Eric. Does the Harbor Department maintain a list of any form of acceptable surveyors?
No.
Other questions for Eric?
No.
Ron?
Eric, to put this possibly into context, do I understand correctly or incorrectly that a review of the liveaboard ordinance is one element, only one element of multiple elements related to the review and possible updating of the Morro Bay Harbor rules and regulations in general?
You're correct, Ron. This aspect of the liveaboard ordinance, there's a couple other aspects that I'd like to address at some point, and however we end up moving forward with this, there's the issue that the fishermen brought up that we kind of put to bed a while back, but, you know, the old guy's rule, you know, provisions on the slip qualifications. I'm working on updates of our paperwork, you know, our contracts with our boaters when they come in, our dockage agreements.
As fishermen and water people, we tend to go on sometimes. So I'll ask that you respect the 5-minute mark, or come as close to that as you can. And I welcome you up to the podium for public comment on this item.
Good evening.
Again, Michael Rowland, you call me Bear. I got a ticket yesterday that I got replaced from the day before for liverboards. I got a notice on September 19th, 2014, to whom it may concern. The citation you are given today will be canceled if your liverboard permit process is complete within the 5 days, deadline Wednesday, September 24th. Becca, she was on vacation. How can I come talk to her? I went to the office, she was on vacation. Okay. They also told me last time I was here, I said something about fees owed. They said the last letter I got from them was $321. When I went to the office, I apparently owed $500 and change. I had to go get the bank. Came back in. She's a kind lady. She gave me a permit to fill out for liverboards. While I was at the bank, apparently she made some wrong statements. And apparently I hadn't gotten my letters because I canceled my mailbox because all I get is letters from them. All right? And when I paid my bill, got it paid off, I told Eric that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get my liverboard. He said, no, I'm not going to approve it. Why not? Well, because it's a scab. I told you that before. And the motor on there, it won't go out front. I thought I got a bigger motor. It won't make a difference. Spend money. I've jumped through a lot of hoops to get him the liverboard. From 07 to 2007 until now, I had to go to court to even give them to give me one. Right? A moment. I have a few tickets here, and they were all, you know, dismissed. They gave me a pile of tickets, like about a half a dozen of them, and they were dismissed. There's one here, the city, this one, the one I just got. All right? I followed everything you can do. The judge said that I qualified. He went in there with me. All right? And the judge said, you qualify. He wasn't going to give me one. 14 months later, they gave me one with a bill. So we mailed it to you. They hadn't delivered everything else they want from me. You're a nice fellow. I don't have anything wrong with you, Eric. Not at all, Sir Eric. Eric? Excuse me, sir. I don't have a problem with you. You seem to have a problem with me. I don't have a problem with you. I don't dislike you. I dislike what you're trying to harass me. And you say that I have to put it back to stock. I got a hold of Chris Craft. I beg to differ. When we go to court, you'll see something different. Because I'm not going to change my attitude. I'm just going to try and keep it going. If I have to go out front with it to prove it to you, I will.
Bear.
I'm listening, Bear.
Okay. Well, I was talking to him, excuse me, because it seems to be, you know. And I don't have to go through the same judge again. It's wasting my time, his time, the city's money, the county's money. Right? I haven't done anything ever. Have I asked him to help me with anything ever. Right? I've had to fend off boats myself because I want to do it myself. I'm responsible for my boat. Everything I do is responsible for my boat, anything in the water light. If my boat is unsafe, I wouldn't be on it. I have no place else to go. I have two dogs, a bird, and a wife. I've never lived anywhere for the past 10 years but there. I've been in and about on this bay for the past for 40 years. I just appreciate you giving me a little kindness and a little bit of support instead of just throwing money at me I don't have because I'm a poor man. I work hard, and I haven't got Social Security yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Bear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Drew Jacobson. I am a resident on Morro Bay. Under federal and California state law, only three types of marine sanitation devices are approved, allowed on a boat equipped with a toilet. They are a Type 1, a Type 2, and a Type 3. Under the California State Harbors and Navigation Codes, Section 775, which states, the legislature hereby finds and declares the following. This is state law. 1. Marine sanitation devices should be regulated pursuant to uniform standards and procedures, federal codes. And California vessel owners should not be subject to any local regulation as the type of marine sanitation device installed on their vessels. Under Appendix A, under sewage and black water, the language used clearly attempts to regulate the type of marine sanitation device used on boats in Morro Bay. This challenges California law. Again, that's under Appendix A, under sewage and black water. The language used clearly attempts to regulate the type of marine sanitation device and add additional stakeholders, and let's finally get this thing done. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Anyone else for public comment?
I agree with this gentleman here. We need to have somebody outside look at this and find out, you know, if his officers are qualified to look at my boat and say it's unsafe. They're a bunch of kids, right? I've been on the water longer than they are old, right? I don't have any problem with them. They're good kids. They work real hard, right? And they're doing their job. But we need to know exactly what's going on here, because I won't, you know, put my sacred space up in the middle of somebody else's face. I won't, you know. So, you know, let's just try and keep it, you know, adults, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Bear.
Hi, my name is Denise Jacobson, and I live on Morro Bay. And I know we have to have rules and regulations and live aboard permits, but I'd really like to see it become more objective than it is subjective right now. I've been in several meetings, and I've heard people talk from the Harbor Department about if you don't have enough money, you shouldn't be on this bay. It's a very subjective comment. I don't think it's a very fair comment to make. When I heard that in a meeting with the state board, the person commented saying, I will be happy when those people are homeless. And that's who we're dealing with right now. And I think we need to have an objective permit system when there is no subjectivity in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Chairman, members of the board, Rory Kramer. I'm a sailor and a commercial fisherman. I've been in and out of this bay for 25 years. That young fellow has helped me out three times in getting a dead boat going. Not the prettiest guy in the world, but he's able, and he always shows up to help. These guys are the most, they're just questionable as hell. I've never seen a harbor where Harbor Patrol pulls up, sticks their noses in private people's boats, and just look in the windows, poke around. It's not objective. It really isn't. Becca's been a sweetheart. Eric came to fore when I had a problem with one of his staff this week, and I shouldn't have had to bring it to him. The next thing you know, they're going to want guns. They don't need them. They've already got too much power. Let them rebuild the docks. Leave the people alone. These folks are just trying to get along. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Rory. Anyone else for public comment? All right, seeing no more public comment, the public comment period is closed, and we'll move on to board discussion. So in the staff report, well, first off, I want to throw one thing out quickly just in response to some of the public comment. Appendix A was referred to, and that I just wanted to be sure that anyone else listening, Appendix A does not cite current rules and regulations or municipal code whatsoever. That's just some of the research, and thank you, Ron, for doing the research that you did. So that's background and research that one of the board members submitted for consideration. That doesn't mean we're going in that direction. That doesn't mean that factually it's not in the rules and regs at all. That's just background to help with the discussion. So I just wanted to be sure that everyone was aware of that. I'm sorry, Rory, I can't take questions from the audience. We'll probably open this back up to public comment, I would imagine, after our discussion, but we can't go back and forth, I'm sorry. So in the staff report, our harbor director suggests that, let's see here, we've got a lot of paperwork tonight. Here we go. Suggest that we come up with either some specific language for suggestions on changes in the ordinance or highlighting some areas in the ordinance and rules and regulations that we would recommend be changed, and then send that back to the department to work on and come up with some suggested language. My opinion right out of the gate is I think a combination of those two would probably work best. This is pretty meaty. It's also an emotional topic, admittedly, because we're talking about people's homes. And I want everyone to realize that that's where I think we should go with it. But again, I'm here to represent you as the board and represent our stakeholders, the public. So with that, we will open it up to discussion. Bill.
So with that, it would be very difficult, I think, to sit up here for the next 2-3 hours and do that. So are you suggesting an ad hoc committee?
No, it's up to the board. Because we're working through this in chunks, I don't personally see the need for an ad hoc committee right now. But if that was the board's will, of course, that would be the will of the board. We're looking at a specific area. We could choose to take this specific area, I suppose, off the table for now and convene an ad hoc committee and look at the entire liveaboard ordinance. I would prefer, because I like to see us get things done, to tackle this portion, get this portion done, and then move on to the next portion, if you will, and take it sequentially. Discussion.
I would agree that we could continue this like you're talking about. Nothing right away. We'll be going through this. And with the public's comments and suggestions along the way, I think that's a good way to go. And the ad hoc committee, I don't think that's necessary. I agree with that part also.
Okay. Thank you, Dana. Bill?
So, you know, it seems to me, at least from the rhetoric that I'm hearing, that there's definitely isolated cases between some members of the liveaboard community and the Harbor Department. And I don't know if we can address that specifically, but we're only talking 20 documented liveaboards. And it seems to me that we could all agree to what is the qualifications of a marine surveyor, have a list of those individuals that are qualified to do those inspections, and somehow or other maybe tighten up the qualifications, if so be it. I don't know. It seems to me that it is a little bit nebulous, but who makes the final decision? I mean, those things we do probably need to discuss, but, you know, we're only talking 20 liveaboard permits. It's not a lot of people.
So why don't we start off the discussion? Thank you for those comments. Why don't we start off the discussion with regard to a marine surveyor and what would be considered, what we would recommend to the Harbor Department for consideration to be an approved surveyor. Now, one of our board members has extensive experience in this profession, and that's Ron. And in some of the information that he gave us, I wanted to ask you about this, Ron. I was surprised to see that in the definition that you gave, that you provided for us, for a professional marine surveyor, a meaning that you gave that is, I would assume, a generally accepted definition, is a person who derives a substantial portion of his or her income from surveying the type of vessel in question and who advertises these services. I think you and Drew in the last discussion we had on this in the meeting talked about some type of qualification or certification, I should say, some type of denomination after your name. Or so I'm at a loss in terms of, and I think that's where part of this discussion is going, is What, in your opinion, Ron, makes for a qualified professional marine surveyor, other than someone just hanging out a shingle and saying that's what they do?
Well, a point of clarification, none of the language that is attached to this agenda item was originated by me. So it's not an expression of my opinion or my experience or whatever. These were, all of the language that you see in the appendices were extracted from, and it's a compilation of, I believe, because Eric's the one that did the compilation, of published, currently published harbor and port rules and regulations. I looked at about 20 different ports and harbors and their published rules and regulations. The vast majority on the west coast of the United States, but there were three or four from, I think, the northeast as well. So that's just a point of clarification. So nothing in the agenda documents don't participate in any of that, in any of that certification process, the public certification process. And a significant number of those people are perfectly qualified marine surveyors. So it's difficult to, having been through this before, it's difficult to say, well, okay, we will determine that a qualified marine surveyor for the purposes of the inspections conducted for the liveaboard and any other situation in Morro Bay must belong to and be certified by X, Y, or Z organization. I think that that's difficult, and I think it's exclusive as well, probably unnecessarily exclusive. It's easy, but I'm not sure it's equitable. And forgive me for a second, because I'm going to segue a little bit into the issue of how the board moves forward. I need to remind myself that the Harbor Department, when it was considering a review of the liveaboard ordinance and its associated activities, the Harbor Department, our resident professionals, determined that there were really only two areas that they wanted the Harbor Advisory Board to help them to look at, and that's permit inspections and, as it says in the staff report, marine surveyor requirements. So I think we should restrict ourselves to those activities, I mean, to those elements. What do I think is a quality? You asked me a question, and I'm perfectly prepared to answer it. What do I think constitutes a qualified marine surveyor? I think first and foremost, a marine surveyor must have an adequate background to enable them to determine whether a vessel is or is not, to determine what the condition of a vessel is, because it may not be good. And those capabilities come from a variety of backgrounds: vessel construction, vessel repair, Coast Guard inspection people, people who have dedicated a great deal of time to educating themselves about boats and what makes a boat run and what doesn't make a boat run and what works and what doesn't work. That can't be, and this is my opinion, that can't be learned quickly, cannot be learned quickly. The second element of requirement is that the individual, men and women doing the job, the individual must be thoroughly knowledgeable of all of the applicable laws, standards, and guidelines. The federal requirements are written law, so that's fairly straightforward, and as far as knowing them. But there's also a very large body of knowledge, or a large body of data, I should say, that's been developed and promulgated over the years by an organization called the American Boat and Yacht Council. It's a huge book, or a large DVD, or CD. But they're voluntary standards. They are not law. I can share with the public and with the board that an ABYC published standard will be looked at with great interest and be given considerable credibility by virtually any court in the land. I do a fair bit of expert witness work, and if we start citing ABYC to some court authority that understands or is led to understand what all that means, they will take it seriously, even though it is not law. So, to recap, what do I think the requirements are? The knowledge and experience to be able to make the judgments about the condition of a vessel, and the knowledge base for the rules, standards, and guidelines that apply to that vessel, and whether they do or do not exist in that vessel, and to what degree and functionality. Did I leave anything out that you asked me?
No. All right, thank you, Ron. So one of the challenges that we're going to have tonight in this discussion, and it was brought up succinctly earlier in public comment, is to allow for as much objectivity as possible at the same time. So I think it's a balancing act, but I also think, I don't believe that we can completely eliminate some subjectivity from this process. I think that's just, I think it comes with the beast. So here's a thought that I have, and I'd like to get discussion and your ideas on this. I would like to see the Harbor Department, maybe I'm crazy, tell me if I am, maintain a list of acceptable marine surveyors that the public, that liveaboards can go out and use. And I would like to see us give suggestions to the department for what would make up an acceptable marine surveyor. So whether it's a certification from either two of those groups, or, and I'll just throw out an arbitrary number, 3 years experience in surveying vessels of the type that are being surveyed by that particular surveyor, or, so if it's a list of three or four things, that would be the objective part. I think ultimately the harbor director would and should still have the ability to have final say on that. But if there were those criteria that would assist any harbor director in making that decision. Because, you know, I mean, obviously it's a sensitive thing. It's a sticky wicket, because the way this could go terribly wrong is if there were six surveyors that wanted to be on the list and the harbor director selected three without really any set of criteria and too much subjectivity. And I think that's what we're trying to avoid. So those are my thoughts on it. So that's I would like to see that as a starting point. To me, that makes sense, but I'd like to get the board members' input on this and see if we want to go down that road. Not everybody all at once. No. Lynn. Oh, get the microphone, please.
I have a question for Ron. The organizations that you mentioned, not by name, but the organizations that marine surveyors belong to, do they have a criteria for membership? Or can somebody simply come up and fill out a form and say, I'm a member?
The two most widely recognized in the United States have very well-developed and long-developed criteria. And they have a qualification process that steps people through experience and gives the individuals an opportunity to demonstrate knowledge. There are one or perhaps two other organizations, and I don't know all of them, that have a less well-developed credential process. And then there are a number of them, if I send them fill in the blank, $100, $150, or $250, they will send me a certificate back and tell me that I'm now a Marine surveyor.
That was the answer I expected, which doesn't make it any easier. You also said that you did not think it was a good idea to simply say the Marine surveyors that are, for our purposes here, qualified must be a member of one of those organizations or one of the two well-known organizations. Why not?
I said that I didn't think that they should be restricted to those organizations because there are qualified people, some of them within reasonable driving distance of Morro Bay, who don't belong to either one of the most widely recognized. I don't see as an insurmountable issue providing individuals who hold themselves out to be professional marine surveyors to be notified that there is an opportunity for them to, my word, may not be the correct word, register with the city of Morro Bay as it relates to this program. Now, I'm not talking about anything else. I don't see that that's really a big logistics problem. And I also think, Mr. Chairman, that it may not be as knotty an issue as it first appears because, or as subjective, potentially, as if I may, I have a question for Eric, which loops back actually to public comment. Eric, Section 15.40.050 of the existing liveaboard ordinance. Item number one, it says conditions for termination slash revocation. Liveaboard permits may be revoked for the following reasons. And item number one is discharge of sewage. Do I understand correctly or incorrectly that per current ordinance, city ordinance, that no discharge of any kind, irrespective of what kind of marine sanitation device a vessel may have on board, is permitted in Morro Bay?
That would be my understanding. And where that gets weird is with systems that treat and discharge sewage. And it's a gray area, and it's an area of concern that the Water Board has and others have, and then the Liveaboard Ordinance just flat out says discharge of sewage.
So am I correct? I mean, if that's the case, then as it relates to one of the inspection points, potential inspection, actually existing inspection points, it's not potential at all, that if a vessel, irrespective of the type of marine sanitation device, which Mr. Jacobson quite correctly identified for us, that those devices at the end of the moment cannot discharge into the bay.
Is that a question or a statement?
That's a question. I just want to be, I'm trying to be as clear on this point as possible because there's a lot of confusion. I've had folks call me in the last week when they saw this agenda item, and that's one of the points that comes up.
It is a confusing point, and it is not terribly, I mean, you can look at straight discharge of sewage, you can look at that on its own merits, but then you look at and as Drew pointed out, you know, we can't dictate whether you have a type 1, type 2, or type 3. We just say you have to have one that's operable. And the types that treat and discharge, if assuming it's operable and working as designed, it is a type 1, type 2, or type 3. It fits into one of those three categories. So by definition, it has what it has, and it's an acceptable, purely on its own merits. It's one of the three types. But then it's at odds with that section you just read. And it's at, the only thing I can say is it's at odds. I mean, it says no discharge of sewage. It doesn't say treated, untreated, otherwise. It'd be nice if, and maybe these weren't, those types of devices weren't considered when this was put together, or maybe they weren't very widely used beyond big commercial boats and ships, so they weren't ever thought of as something that would come under consideration.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, because one of the two elements of our task are inspections, and it seems to we need to, in our work, we should probably address this gray area and end up, hopefully at the end of the day, making some recommendation at least to resolve the gray area, even if we don't have a resolution for it.
Yeah, and I think that's, I would agree. I think part of our purpose tonight is to identify any of those gray areas or black areas. Here's my marine pun for the night. To identify those, and we don't necessarily tonight have to come up with the solution for that, because our harbor director gave us an out on that. We can identify that and send that back his way, and he can come back to us with some suggested language if you chooses to indulge us. So I don't want to go down that road right now, because we were on the surveyor road. So here's my thinking on setting a minimum criteria, set of criteria, because I've got to look at worst case scenario. It's just how my mind works. I look at risk, and I've been trained on how to analyze risk, and one of the ways that you look at risk is you look at absolute worst-case scenario. So worst-case scenario could be is if there are no real criteria to get on the list of approved surveyors, any knucklehead could go down and put his or her name on that list, and that person that would be surveyed. I mean, those are the first two things that come to my mind. But to me, it makes common sense to have that minimum set. And then beyond that, then with approval of the harbor director, that person would be placed on the list. Dana?
Yes. I'm hearing big variety here. You know, trying to compress this down a little bit, streamline. We're looking at a level of acceptance, you know, the highest level of, say, these two most respected certificates of marine surveying, which I agree, I think this is quite a ways beyond what we're looking for these five items of inspection. It doesn't need to be certain, the vessel doesn't have to be surveyed that extensive, but I agree, we don't just want somebody who can just sign, you know, here I am. I think we should take the discretion of the Harbor Department, that's what they're here for, if they have a list of people that are approved by them to do these inspections, and that an ADYC criteria for the inspections be integrated in what the Harbor Department is looking for. The criteria is more important than just what certificate the inspector has. That's what I think. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Input from other board members, please. So, do we want to then? Well, and I'll open it up for a public comment once again, because I see a lot of posturing going on out there in the gallery. So, I'd like to open it up. Please approach the podium and state your name for the record.
My name is Chris Anderson.
We'll keep this to 3 minutes. Your name, please, sir?
Chris Anderson.
Thank you, Chris.
And I'm kind of confused about this inspection thing. Is this a seaworthy thing? Or is this? Are we really just concerned where everybody's waste is going? I've heard both of them brought up, and I was sitting there asking myself, how do you survey a hull when it's in the water? I can't think of any way that you can do that. You can poke a stick in the bottom of the boat and say, well, try. It's not leaking. But you can't guarantee the integrity of that hull. And like Eric, I agree there's a most of these boats that are really a hazard are wooden. And they're old. And they're the ones that are going to sink in a storm. There's the ones that are going to hit a dock and go down and fill the bay with fuel and waste. And now, how are we going to address this issue? I mean, if you're going to do a survey, we're not equipped to do a survey. You have to take that boat out of the water. And a lot of boats, we don't have a haul out here. You may say we have a boat yard, but I would say otherwise. It won't take a lot of the boats here. A lot of the boats are too long, too big, too heavy. So maybe we should be striving towards that boat haul out yard. And Chris Anderson would like to volunteer when that gets to the planning stages. And I don't think you can go anywhere with this liveaboard thing until we can resolve that issue. I mean, there's no way to check to see if a boat's seaworthy while it's in the water. It has to be hauled out. I bought a boat, and I had one of these marine surveyors who happened to be a friend of the broker, you know, and yeah, everything's good. And I said, I'm not buying the boat until you take it out of the water. And I took it out of Ventura, and I found additional things with it. And that's really the only way I know how to sit there and survey it. And maybe we need to get an X-ray machine in here. If we're talking about having more incidences, like a tidal wave or something catastrophic happening, yeah, the boat's going to be full of restaurants besides sunken boats. But I digress. I've said what I need to say. You really can't survey a boat like that.
Thank you, Chris.
Drew Jacobson. But what it comes down to really is if you're a professional surveyor is whether or not insurance companies, financial companies, banks, underwriters accept your survey. Ron can read a survey. Ron is at that level of marine surveyor. He can read a survey from a person and probably tell in the first 10 minutes of reading it, because they're generally 17, 18, 19 pages long, whether a surveyor is acceptable. Also, at the end of Appendix, I believe it's Appendix B, I'm not sure if Ron put it in, somebody put it in, language of what might be acceptable for a surveyor for the city. It's good language. It is good language. So you might take a look at that. It's at the end of the document that was submitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else for public comment at this time?
Chairman Rory Kramer again. Thank you.
Ron's absolutely correct. There are many associations that do certifications for surveyors. But at the end of the day, I think you might be kind of reinventing the wheel. We've already got a United States body that does this. Coast Guard, Coast Guard Auxiliary. We've got an MSDT office down the road that comes and inspects each and every one of our commercial vessels. Coast Guard Auxiliary is available every week to go out, every boat. If they okay a boat, they can't un-okay it. as far as I'm concerned, they're the bottom line.
Thanks, Roy.
Mike Rowland, again, Bear. Hi. I was surveyed by a U.S. A member of the USSA, United States Surveyors Association certified number, the U.S. Coast Guard Master Licensee. All right. As far as I'm concerned, that's pretty, he knows what he's doing. I know what I'm doing. He has last say. All right. We don't have a dictatorship here. He wasn't elected. He was appointed. We should have a harbor master here that's elected so we can all deal with it. Right? I voted for city council. One person, but still, it should be an elected office. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment at this time?
Denise Jacobson again. I'm not sure if I can just comment about surveying right now or anything. Are we going to come back around to anything else? I'll wait.
I would imagine we'll probably have one more round of public comment.
Okay, then I'll wait because it's not about surveying.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you. Public comment is now closed. Eric, did you want to respond to something?
Yeah, I just want to remake the point. You know, in the staff report, I point out somewhere in there that should a bunch of inspection criteria get lumped on to any type of liverboard inspection, at some point, in my opinion, it starts to cross over into a true vessel marine survey. And again, and also as I pointed out in my staff report, contrary to some of the public comment you heard, we're not a bunch of kids. We are recognized and entrusted experts in vessel and boating safety. We do a very cursory inspection, assuming the vessel is designed, constructed, and maintained as it is manufactured. We do a pretty cursory inspection for the liveaboard inspection itself. The liveaboard ordinance in section 15.40.040 and permit issuance, A1, in terms of the vessel speaking to any sort of a survey that are the vessel's condition, the only thing that it speaks to in the whole ordinance is vessels to be used for liveaboard purposes must be in good material condition, not likely to sink or become a menace to navigation, and to be of a design suitable for operation on the waters of the Pacific Ocean. All vessels must be currently registered or documented. The liveaboard ordinance, when it was crafted through that whole public process 20-odd years ago, obviously the desire was there that if somebody wanted to have a marine surveyor come in and make the determination under that section that the boat met that criteria, that would be okay to the city. The assumption being most people would do it with, or assuming the assumption was most people would do it with the Harbor Patrol. So our Harbor Patrol officers make that determination based on the material at hand and their training and expertise. Marine surveyor obviously can go a lot deeper and a lot further and make a lot bigger determination. I don't think it was ever intended to be a true marine survey.
All right, thank you, Eric. So we'll have another opportunity for public
test. I don't see there any reason why they can't, but I don't think we really have a problem in the marine surveyors because we're talking about liveaboards, and there's a lot of things that the boat owner can do to get it certified. I don't really think we have a big problem, personally.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Yeah, so maybe we're fixing something that doesn't need to be fixed. So as a follow-up to that, Bill, and if it doesn't need fixing, we'll close this up and move on to the next issue within this issue. So as it currently stands, the current liveaboard ordinance states that the liveaboard inspections can be performed by a Harbor Patrol officer or a, and this is where the rubber meets the road here, right here, a qualified marine surveyor acceptable to the city. So if we decide that we don't have a problem, it's fine. We don't have a problem in our opinion as a board. But that lets stand a potential problem, and again, I don't want to stir anything up if it doesn't need stirring up, but right now as it stands, if someone came to the harbor and the harbor department and said, I want to be put on the list, if we recommend that a list be maintained, and the harbor department did that, then it would be up to the discretion of the city to put that person on or not without any criteria whatsoever. Which to me just seems like a lot of discretion. As I mentioned earlier, at the end of the day, there will be some subjectivity and discretion there. That's part of the job of a director. That's what they're hired to do. So, thank you, Bill, because you're bringing up the point. Do we need to continue to go down this path?
Well, you have an ordinance right here. If someone wants to get an inspection, they can look at that. Whether or not there's a list or not, I think, is irrelevant. I mean, I think people are knowledgeable and smart enough to pick up the, go to Google or pick up the Yellow Pages, in this case, I don't think, and find a marine surveyor if he wants to do it on a private basis. States in our ordinance that they can do that. Simple as that. And, you know.
Okay, thanks. So, yeah, it's a good point. Are we stirring up dust here where it doesn't need to be stirred up? And we'll go back to public comment in a while, and that's something that I would be interested in hearing from the public about as well. I mean, has it been working okay with regard specifically to qualified marine surveyor acceptable to the city? So if it's been working, we don't need to fix what ain't broke, as the saying goes. Any other comments with regard to that?
And so far as the board's process is concerned, what could be done, not only with the surveyor issue, but also with the inspection issue, there's been some work done on the part of the board. There's been thought given on the part of the board. There's been public input. Each of the board members, independently, so that we don't get into Brown Act issues, could be given the opportunity to review these materials in this agenda item and provide their input to the chair with any comments or any input or anything that they'd like to do, bearing in mind that the purpose would be to provide that information to the Harbor Department, which is in effect the city of Morro Bay, and allow them to assimilate it and to use what they think would be useful to them. The last time we talked about, when we were last talking about this business, there were concerns expressed, at least I did, and I think other people did as well, expressed concerns about a couple of things. The possibility for subjectivity, as brought up by Mrs. Jacobson, some perceived liability risks for the city of Morro Bay and its citizens who pay the taxes. Always the safety issues relative to vessels, all vessels on the bay. And that's what got us here. So I'd like to have the opportunity to respond to this agenda item on a point-by-point basis or whatever points I think. And provide that information to you, knowing that it would go back to the Harbor Department for their consideration and their determination as to whether there needs to be ordinance changes or do not need to be ordinance changes. For instance, one of the things that's in the current ordinance is this business about operable and much farther than that. And insofar as criteria for surveyors are concerned, we can provide some suggested criteria to the Harbor Department. I do agree that at the end of the day, the Harbor Department needs to be the city, if you will. The city needs to determine who is appropriate and who is not. I don't want to use the word qualified. Who's appropriate and who's not appropriate to do these inspections.
Thank you, Ron. I'll first respond to your suggestion as far as process and then bring us back to this surveyor issue, because I want to get the surveyor issue nailed down. All due respect, I don't agree at all with your suggestion for the process, because that's what we're doing right now, and I wouldn't feel comfortable as chair taking suggestions and then just moving them on to the director that's why we're here as a board, to do that in a public forum. So it's a bit of a slog, and we've got to go through meetings like this, but this gives us the opportunity to air this publicly and probably more importantly, to get the input from the public as well. So, that's what our objective as a board is here. So I'll circle us back to the marine surveyor issue, and then to meet your intent of the suggestion, Ron, what I think we can do then is point out some areas. You pointed one out earlier. We'll get back to that. I've got one that I've got a question on. Point out those areas that do need some change, some of those gray areas that can be enhanced, and maybe give some suggestions. And staff could take a look at that and then come back to us with suggested language. So there may be still a couple of iterations here that we need to go through. But back to, if we're going to get at least this one nailed down tonight, the qualified marine surveyor acceptable to the city. What Bill has stated is that, and I'm going to paraphrase, correct me if I butcher it at all, Bill, is that we're fixing a problem that doesn't need fixing. And I'm okay with that, but I'm okay with that, but I'm reminding myself, as well as the public here, vocally, that does leave acceptable to the city, leaves full discretion to the city on what is acceptable.
And the city, as you said, Jeff,
that responsibility to the Harbor Department.
Right, and so the thing is that, as you stated earlier in your discussion here, Jeff, Eric over here is the harbor master, and he ultimately makes the final decision. So if we have a problem with his decision-making process in marine surveyors, then we then need to take task. As of right this moment, I don't think there is a problem.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Eric, do you feel at this point that the process, in terms specifically to with regard to qualified marine surveyor acceptable to the city, that it's been working okay? Do you think we should or should not maintain a list? Or do you think it's been working okay as it's been?
I don't know that we need to maintain a list. I mean, you take the extreme examples, Ron's example of, there's some organizations out there, and I don't know what they are. I'm not well-versed in all of that. I know of NAMS and SAMS and a couple others, but if there is indeed an organization out there that you can pay $200 and answer 10 questions and you get a certificate and you're a marine surveyor, that would worry me. But how do I determine whether it was, somebody that went, that's got the experience and knowledge and know-how and is associated with an accredited type organization, or some that out there that aren't accredited, associated with any, and they're perfectly good surveyors, or the guy that's gone and gotten his one out of the Cracker Jack box? It's acceptable to me, and then the next question becomes, if I find one that's unacceptable, I just say, no, you're not acceptable. And then we let it fall out, if it falls out. So far, no, that has not happened. We've had one surveyor that has done any of these at all. And I have not researched or tried to determine one way or another which sort of certificate he has. I know the organization that he gets stamped on with his stuff, but I'm not expert enough in marine surveyors and the marine surveyor world to know where Drew's certificate or qualifications fall on that scale. And again, it goes to Bill's question, do we need that? Do we need to find out where that scale is? Do we need to define that scale?
So, I'm reiterating here, I'm repeating something, but to me, common sense would dictate that there is a minimum set of standards. It just seems that we can't come up with a suggestion for those minimum set of standards. That's my thinking on it. Yes, Ron?
Actually, there's a pretty simple way to establish your standard. When I told my attorney 35, 40 years ago, whatever it was, that I was going to, I'd take that pretty seriously.
Okay, so other comments? So before, because I think we're just going to wrap that subject up without having to go any further on it. But before I do that, I want to open it up to public comment again. It looks to me that the direction we're taking on that is leaving it exactly as it stands. So with that said, I'll open it up to public comment once more. Is there anyone that would like to comment?
Drew Jacobson. I agree with you, Ron. I do take the liability issues seriously. That's why on my form, I show that I do not accept liability. I have language on the form that states that. And the reason being is because the ordinance itself, under Section 1, which I think Eric mentioned that it has, it states basically that it's seaworthy and operable. Those terms are ridiculous to use. By the type of survey that the city does on a boat, the city has huge liabilities. I mean huge liabilities. If they can go on the, and I just had my survey done on my boat. I had a city harbor patrol officer. He spent 5 minutes. I basically directed him around to what to look at, what he should check. I was granted a permit, or at least I think I'm going to get a permit. I may not. When I do get that permit, if I do get that permit, if I take my boat out onto the Pacific Ocean, the city has indemnified me. They've underwritten me. They've said that my boat is seaworthy, that it's capable of ocean going without any possible probable sinking of the boat. Now, I get excited when I get my permit. I take my family. Let's say somebody else takes their family, friends out to celebrate the permit. And the boat, in fact, does sink because a through hull is corroded, which the city does not check, or there's dry rot in the hull, which the city does not check, and the boat sinks. Those people will sue the city, and they will win big time. They will win everything. This is a problem with the ordinance. You can pass this ordinance off as saying, well, we can just put it off. This is serious business. The city is liable. It doesn't take an attorney to answer those questions about the liability of seaworthiness of the vessel, number one. So I try to protect myself as much as possible in my documentation of the boat. I do not claim that that the boat is seaworthy. The city does. I do not. I have spent 20 minutes on the boat. I did not look at any of the systems on the boat, any of the through hulls, whether the boat is materially sound. You can't. That takes a survey that lasts a day or 2 days, 17, 18 pages of survey, to even come close. And even then, it's a question of, well, maybe. But the city seems to say, fine, that's what we're going to do. I'm indemnified by the city. And anybody who has a liveaboard boat in here is indemnified also. They're underwritten by the city. The other thing about it is checking liveaboards, inspecting liveaboards. As a surveyor on the bay for the last, I don't know, 6-7 years, I've inspected a lot of boats, full survey inspections. I've found that at least a quarter of the boats that I have inspected have some issue. These are non-liveaboard. These are recreational boats. A quarter of those boats have some issue with their MSD, whether the Y-valve is in the wrong position, but they're discharging overboard. In some cases, because the boats on this bay are older boats. Some of these boats don't even have a Type 1, Type 2, or Type 3. They were built in the 50s and the 60s. They're on the bay right now. They don't have any MSDs, and they are discharging directly into this bay right now. That if you extrapolate a quarter of the boats on this bay, that's about 100 boats right now that are discharging on the bay. People use them as weekend condos, especially in the state marina. Pump outs? None. Able to move your boat in and out of the marina? No. Shoaling? You're charging right now. That should be looked into. That should be changed. I mentioned that 7 years ago in 2007 at two meetings, and I said something's going to happen if those boats aren't changed. 2 years ago, they had an E. coli outbreak with some of the oyster farms back here. You were warned that that would happen. And tonight, I hear nonsense about surveyors and what should be done. These are simple surveys. It's a 10-minute survey. It's not a survey. This is an inspection. The liability is a killer because the city won't change section number one to lay it on me, so I have to do it myself, and they still stand behind it. And as far as checking other boats, they refuse to do it. They've refused to do for 7 years. So I'd really like this to go to some sort of citizens group where we can really discuss what's going on in this bay, because the city's not going to do it. They've been angry at me for bringing up this issue for 7 years. It needs to be talked. It needs to be discussed, because these boats are out there and they're hurting the bay. And this has to change. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew.
Seems like the same people are coming up here.
Hi, Mike Rowland, Bear. This is a liveaboard application. Right here. At the bottom, it says, vessel inspection by Harbor Department. Of course, the vessel name, inspector, vessels, and then VHF operation telephone, current registration. Vessel made way under her own power to the inspection site without being a threat to navigation or a danger to sinking or causing injury. And the last one is a Coast Guard approved marine sanitation device, a portable potty. Right? When one of the harbor patrol officers went on my boat, the first time they inspected it, they went down below, they looked at my device, and they said, Bear, there's something wrong with this. I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, there's no overboard. I said, of course not. Chris Graff didn't make one. I've never seen anything like it before. All right? She's supposed to be an inspector. She doesn't know what she's doing. They're not children, excuse me. Right. They're young gentlemen, right? And you have a good scoutmaster. Scott is a great guy. And these kids do what you tell them to do. And then there's a lot of opinions involved. I don't have a problem with you guys. I really don't. I don't want to lose my home, my sacred space. Have a little compassion. Thank you.
Thank you, Bear. Anyone else? All right. Thank you. All right, I'll start over. It was pointed out during public comment about the word seaworthiness and the extent of surveys. And I'm looking back to the municipal code, the ordinance, item number one, and rereading that. You pointed that out to us earlier, and I'll reread that in just a moment. But are there other rules and regulations that are on top of that in the process that I'm missing somewhere with regard to the seaworthiness and...
Not in the liveaboard ordinance.
Okay.
That's the sole reference to vessel condition, and then the inspection form itself just reflects that section where it said vessel made way to no power without being threatening navigation or danger or sink or cause injury.
So there were some comments made with regard to the liability. I in reading this, I'm not an attorney, but I played one on TV. I can tell that this was written with an attorney's hand, with limiting liability in mind, and I'll reread it. Vessels to be used for liveaboard purposes must be in good material condition, not likely to sink. Doesn't say unsinkable, or become a menace to navigation, and to be of a design suitable for operation on the waters of the Pacific Ocean. All vessels must be currently registered or documented. So I'll reread the Pacific Ocean thing. Be of a design suitable for operation on the waters of the Pacific Ocean. don't think.
Or to say it has to be.
No. A design suitable. So I don't see that ordinance as co-signing onto the seaworthiness of a vessel. I can tell that it was written actually with that concern of liability in mind, and I don't see any other regulations that go to the extent, frankly, am I missing something? Ron, I'd like to get your input on that.
I think if the ordinance was changed to modify the on Pacific Ocean to something different, which I'm not prepared to talk about right now, but it seems to me that the issue here is Morro Bay. It's a pretty big piece of water, really. I think that's the only problem that I see with that particular provision.
And what's the problem with it?
The problem with it is that there are, in fact, vessels that the city may decide. If you go with that ordinance, if you go with that provision of the ordinance, I would argue that there are vessels that are permitted liveaboards that were not designed and were not built and are not suitable to operate on the Pacific Ocean. But by definition, Pacific Ocean is unprotected water.
Without making any recommendations for change?
I'd like to recommend to make no changes to the liveaboard at this time. Besides, maybe, as Ron said, a couple wordings that maybe we can direct toward Eric to look at.
Well, when you say recommending no change, are you...
On the survey.
Okay, yeah, good.
Let's do that.
Yeah. What does the rest of the board feel with regard to that?
I agree with that, but I think part of the problem arises because we continue to use the word survey. We're not doing a survey. They're doing an inspection. And it happens that besides the Harbor Patrol officers who are qualified to do that inspection, there has to be some kind of criteria if you're going to have somebody else do it. And the only other criteria that we could give would be somebody who calls themselves a marine surveyor, someone who looks closely at boats. So I think if we, number one, stop saying the word survey in relation to the liveaboard inspection, recognize that it's an inspection, and also recognize if you're going to have people other than the Harbor Patrol, the city-appointed people who work on our waterfront and who work on boats, then you have to call them something, and you are implicitly giving a bit of criteria, a bit of objectivity to those who would be allowed to do it by saying a qualified marine surveyor. So it was a linguistic problem. What else could you call somebody other than a surveyor? Or who else could do an inspection? And how else could the Harbor Department decide if they were capable of doing that inspection except by calling them or having a surveyor do it?
Thank you. Excellent points. And I would, in response to that, I would add that nowhere on the application for the liveaboard permit is the word survey. Further, on the permit itself, it states that the inspector does not certify that the vessel is safe or seaworthy, and further goes on that the applicant agrees to indemnify and hold the city harmless. So on the form itself, the inspector is signing here that they are not certifying that the vessel is safe or seaworthy, and it is simply an inspection. That's a checklist inspection of the sanitation device. Let me even check myself on that. It's a check off that no discharge or sewage or wastewater is allowed, So thank you for pointing that out. Dana, did you have further comment?
Well, I would agree that according to the way this is all written up, I think we don't really need to change anything. The issue with it being a survey, whether or not it's just an inspection. That's what it says. And I'm not sure what you guys want as far as the liverboards that are here tonight, if you want more of a survey or less of a survey. It's going back and forth. When you talk about the rest of the boats in the bay, I think, well, this is an area that is most concerned. These are people that are getting a permit to stay on their boat to live on the bay. So they would be possibly the greatest impact of a boat owner that the city can regulate. Anyways, if it were to go beyond that, I think then that's up to State Park Marina to deal with, and if the city has to be involved, whatever. As far as changing this, I think the only thing that I can see that you might want to change is in this Article 1 here, vessels to be used, liberal purses, must be in good material condition, not likely to sink or become a menace to navigation, and to be a design suitable for operation on the waters of Morro Bay Harbor instead of the Pacific Ocean. I mean, if you just change that, that seems like it would solve a lot of problems. Other than that, I don't really see any changes.
This is in make sure I'm in the right place here. Page 29, page 30. I may find my page 28. There we go. This is in section 15.40.040, permit issuance. Item number A1, vessels to be used for liveaboard purposes. Simply changing the words Pacific Ocean to Morro Bay. So we'd like to throw that out to the department for consideration, Eric. We're not making a recommendation right now that it is changed to that, but we're giving you that as an area to look at, and you can come back and let us know what you think about it or not.
And perhaps a way to move forward on this, and I agree with Drew to a degree on the liability issue. I mean, but I don't think that because we do a liveaboard inspection, we've suddenly underwritten the entire operation and condition of that vessel. We do have that liability waiver that you read out in the inspection form. Everything we do on the water, if I stop and check a boat for anything and it goes on because of some other condition that somebody can make the case that I should have been aware of, it's a liability. We've got liabilities left and right. Obviously, the aim is to minimize those liabilities. I would suggest a way to move forward on this is bring this to the attention of our city attorney and their firm, which they have many in there, and let them look at that. The Pacific Ocean thing, I mean, Ron makes a point. If you define the Pacific Ocean, well, what is that? Today, before the wind came up, it was pretty beautiful in the middle of winter. You know, under what conditions on the Pacific Ocean? The Pacific Ocean pretty much has every condition under the sun that any ocean can have, and there's no one vessel in the world that can cope with every single one of those conditions. So where does it end? Waters of Morro Bay? You know, I think the intent, again, is to ensure that a liveaboard vessel has the basic equipment to contain its sewage, to communicate, to be able to make a call if something's wrong. Remember, we're safety and security forces on the bay. You know, you're living on public property. You're subject to a permit process to allow that. And some rudimentary ability to safely operate and get underway under a myriad of conditions. To get underway to go get water, to go empty your holding tank. Your pennant line's breaking, you're on a mooring, and it's blowing 25, 30 knots in the springtime. You've got to be able to get underway, and your boat's got to be able to safely maneuver under relatively normal conditions. Yeah, on the Pacific Ocean, it's
24 hours a day, 365 days a year? No, there's not a lot of boats that are going to be able to do that. But the intent, I believe, is some rudimentary operability and condition of the vessel that precludes, you know, just complete houseboat type situations for a structure or a vessel that was never intended to physically move through the water and be able to be a part of the safety and security force, has instead become a liability. And I think that's what the Liveaboard Ordinance was trying to get at and still tries to get at, and what we try to get at. We don't do a marine survey, and I don't think, like Drew says, I mean, there's through holes, there's engines, there's chain plates, there's tons of things that we don't look at that will create unseaworthiness issues that we don't go after as part of the Liveaboard inspection. It's just a basic, is the boat in relatively sound condition and can it get its underway and get out of its own way and get under power? So perhaps, as I rambled a bit there, but taking this to the city attorney and having them look at the liability issues, the language that's in there in terms of that one section that, and maybe changing from Pacific Ocean to Morro Bay. And like you said, I mean, yes, I have to assume that when this was written, it had a pretty good city attorney review of it. And things that were flags that were raised then were raised, and what we have took that into consideration. But like everything, laws change, city attorneys change. It's not a bad thing to have these sorts of things reviewed once in a while, and even the inspection form itself. And getting some indemnification type language in there, making sure that we're solid with our language on it. Wouldn't necessarily change the Liveaboard Ordinance itself, with the exception of maybe that wording, Pacific Ocean to Morro Bay, but redoing the forms to make sure that the liability issues aren't there.
All right.
At least minimize.
So we've got those two issues. Thank you, Eric. We've got those two issues as suggestions for you. The other issue that was brought up by Ron earlier was in section 15.40.050, termination or revocation of permit, and the first item there is discharge of sewage. So that issue was brought up because under one of the approved MSDs, type 1, 2, or 3, it is legal to dump treated sewage, that's my understanding, but that needs to be taken, have it, pursuant to this section, shall be appealable to the Harbor Advisory Board. Any such appeal must be filed in writing with the Harbor Director within 10 days of the date of notice of revocation. The revocation shall be stayed while the appeal is pending unless it is determined by the Harbor Director that immediate cessation of overnight occupancy of the vessel is necessary for the preservation of the public peace, health, or safety. The appeal shall be filed in writing and shall specify all of the grounds for the appeal. The Harbor Advisory Board shall provide the permit holder an opportunity to present evidence on his behalf and to challenge the determination of the Harbor Director. Formal rules of evidence or procedure need not be followed. If the Harbor Advisory Board is unable to approve any formal motion regarding the appeal after two publicly held hearings on the appeal, then the revocation shall become effective 3 days following the second public meeting. If the appeal is denied revocation, and then it looks to me to be a typo here, if the appeal is denied revocation, shall become effective 3 days following the Harbor Advisory Board's decision. So here's what surprises me about that. We're an advisory body without rulemaking or authoritative power. We're here to serve at the pleasure of the council and make recommendations to the council and to the department for that matter. And you guys listen to our input and take it under consideration. It seems to me that there's an implied course of action here, and it doesn't really spell it out. It spells it out on one side, but the implied side is that, if I'm reading this correctly, we've got the ability to appeal your decision, the city's decision. Say again? To countermand it. I'd like you to have the attorney look at that, because that to me seems inconsistent with everything else that I know about this board and the way the advisory boards work.
Well, I mean, any decision by any department, be it planning, police, public services, you know, any sort of a ruling that they make is appealable. Typically, it goes to their governing body, which ultimately is the city council, but if there's a public works advisory board or recreation parks commission in between, I think in most cases the city council and the city's direction in the past has been to route it through that applicable body. It looks like it gave you some overruling or binding power to, if I make a decision. And I would purport that, it says for termination or revocation, it would be my thought that that section would apply to if someone's applied for a permit, has never gotten one, and or theirs expired and they're renewing it. This really just says termination or revocation. If somebody's permit has expired and they're wishing to renew it, and I decide not to renew it, I would assume that that would be appealable under the same section, even though this just says it's appealable under termination and revocation, which means you have a permit, you've done something I think is bad or wrong, and I'm taking it away. I would think that that would apply, although it doesn't say that exactly. I would think that would apply to an application as well.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to take that part to the city attorney as well.
Well, and what I'm thinking about is, we have the opportunity to listen to an appeal from fishermen for purposes of qualifying for a slip. And actually, if you read through that, even that appeal process results in a recommendation to the director. Because qualifying for a commercial slip, it doesn't give us the authority to actually countermand. And even so, it would seem to me if that was the intent, then that would still obviously have to go to the council. So that would be one of the suggestions for me to the department, for you to look at or have the attorney look at, but that definitely, to me, that looks like it needs to be cleaned up.
So I guess the question is that, should it get appealed to the Harbor Advisory Board, is that appeal advisory to council, or is that appeal final?
It can't be final in the way the rest of the city code works. I think a template might be looking at how the slip qualifying appeal process works. Because again, I think my memory serves me pretty correctly in this instance, even that appeal process, it is a recommendation to you.
Yeah, Eric, I agree with Jeff. I think that there is an inappropriate implication possible in the existing language.
Because if the way this reads right now, it would get sticky pretty quickly, I think, if the liver board actually did have to come before us with an appeal. I've only been on the board for 4 years. That hasn't come.
Talk about all the time, but it isn't required by ordinance anywhere.
No, if you go back, you're looking at that section 1540.050 are the conditions under which we can terminate or revoke a permit. If you go back to the previous page, 1540.040, permit issuance, A1 is that paragraph we went over and over, liver board purposes must be in good material condition, blah, blah, blah. 2, liver board vessels required to have adequate vessel sanitation facilities.
Eric, I'm referring to 15.40.40 or .040. That's what I'm referring to. If I said 50, I misspoke. 15.40.040, the okay. same thing you're now talking about.
Okay.
Item A1.
But didn't you just mention radio and phone? Because that is right there. Item number 4.
It's number 4.
Thanks.
I think that's why it was getting confused.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you were talking about the sewage discharge part on revocation.
I appreciate that. So the only other than the Waters of Morro Bay thing, which has already been talked about for a long time, comply with applicable federal and state regulations. Because that takes care of at least 8 of the items on your safety list by definition.
Doesn't that start walking us back down the surveyor path versus just the inspection of those limited items?
Maybe not. You don't have to inspect. And there's all sorts of stuff in ordinances that are required that no one is mandated to follow up on. I'm not talking about the harbor stuff. covers all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you look at the ordinances for real property in Morro Bay, for instance, that I have some experience with, there's all sorts of requirements that there's no enforcement on. So, I mean, it's just a suggestion. I mean, you know, what, do whatever. I think it addresses part of the liability issue.
All right, well, you could throw that into the hopper. All right. So we've offered a laundry list so far. I think we've got four items, if I'm counting correctly. We're doing better. We got the four items done in about 20 minutes. It took us over an hour to do the nothing item. What other items do we want to point out that might be gray areas or need a further looking at by us in the department or perhaps the attorney?
No? Well,
all right, so that, go ahead, sorry.
Eric has already mentioned it. He mentioned it two or three months ago and mentioned it again tonight, and I think, as I understand it, the Harbor Department is undertaking an internal review of the inspection form as well. And that was 3 months ago or whatever it was. That was in response. He responded to the point of potential liability for the city. And he's been thinking about it, and he has some data from other places to refer to, you know, if he decides to do that.
Okay. And going back, thank you, Ron, and going back to our staff report, looking at the two things that we were looking at accomplishing, we certainly got the one, the first, which was the ordinances as it pertains to marine surveyors. So we suggested that nothing be changed there. And then the inspections themselves. So we hit on those four items, and I suppose a fifth then, and I think you were already doing, as Ron just alluded to, a fifth then would be modification or review and potential modification of the inspection form itself. Anything else? And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you make sausage. Okay, before I close this item, One last opportunity for public comment. I am going to limit it to 2 minutes, though, because it's starting to get a little late.
I promise not to take 2 minutes.
Drew Jacobson again. The only thing I can thank you very much for plodding through this. I understand where you're coming from. It's unfortunate that this was brought up in the first place. It's kind of nonsense. I am very serious, though, about checking all vessels on this bay. I am very serious about that. I will harp on this, and I will stay on this, and I will write letters to people beginning now. Up until this point.
All right. Public comment is now closed. Eric?
Yeah, I can't let those comments go unstraightened out. Mr. Jacobson pointed out a section in the Harbors and Nav Code, section 775, where we cannot regulate the type of MSD installed on a vessel. Question of whether that implies that we cannot require that a MSD be installed on the vessel would be a question of law that I don't know the answer to. It says I can't tell you what type. I can't tell you whether you can put type 1, type 2, or type 3 on. If certain vessels of a certain size and then certain commercial passenger vessels require that MSDs be on board, and if they're required under federal or state law to be on board, yes, I can enforce that. I can't tell you which type of MSD to put on your vessel. Can I tell you that you have to have a MSD on your vessel? Perhaps. Under the law, I don't know. That would be a question for the city attorney. Pretend we can. Pretend I can say all you guys are vessel owners and the city of Morro Bay is promulgated a regulation that says you must have an MSD on your vessel. Without probable cause, I have no way of determining whether you've got one on and whether it's operable and in good condition. It just says you have to have one. I don't see that having such a regulation on the books is going to ensure that all those vessels are not going to discharge just because they are required to have something on their vessel. As Drew pointed out, he's inspected vessels and he's found things amiss. I can't just go on under my authority given to me under the law, inspect your vessel to make sure that something isn't amiss without probable cause. And that is a threshold of the law that doesn't give me authority to just go in and check any old vessel any old time. Under the live aboard process, it's an inspection to get a permit. I cannot, if Drew and Denise have a valid live aboard permit, under the law, unless I have probable cause, I can't just go in next week and make sure that your thing's working as it should be. I can't, with anybody's boat.
It
becomes a pretty big can of worms to try and institute some sort of a global requirement. And again, I don't know, and it would be an attorney to answer this, and maybe Department of Boating Waterways, and they can get their state attorneys, and I'll ask. I'm happy to go ask. If that section that says that I cannot dictate what type of MSD to put on, am I able to dictate that an MSD be on? That is a question I don't know, and I'm happy to ask that. But then it begs the next question, okay, if I am, and we go there, is that going to do any good?
All right. So we're not going to get into an extensive discussion on that topic because it's not on the agenda tonight. As a matter of fact, this may come up during future agenda items tonight. So thank you, everyone, for your patience through that item, item C1. And unless there are any other comments by board members with regard to item C1, nope, then that can... Oh, yes, Lynn.
Partially in response to Mr. Jacobson's statement that we need an MSD on all boats, we have a federal law that says you must not discharge. If he knows of somebody who is discharging, does he not have something of an obligation if this is something that bothers him so much? He would have an obligation to report it and to perhaps go further with it and try to correct the situation directly with the individual involved.
Thank you, Lynn. And that concludes item C1, the review of liveaboard ordinance regarding liveaboard permit inspections and marine surveyor requirements. And again, thank you everyone for your perseverance and patience with that process. But we got there. Item C2. Update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities, if there are any. Ron?
The committee has received, since the prior Harbor Advisory Board meeting in September, has received no new information from the consultant or from the city or from the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. So I would turn to the harbor director, who is the city liaison for that portion of the contract, and just give us a brief update if there's something new happening.
Sure. So as Dana, as you brought up earlier, the survey's out. That did circulate through the ad hoc committee, through the fishermen's organization, had some revisions. Hard filled theirs out. I sent one over next door, and they filled it out and sent it in. So hopefully we're getting some good information back. So that's a... If you got any questions, that's about all the updates I've got on that.
Anything else, Ron? Any questions or comments from board members with regard to that report? None? Great. That concludes that item. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. Item C3 is an update from the Capital Improvement Planning, or CIP, Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities, if any. The committee didn't meet over the last month, so there's nothing to report there. That concludes item, any questions, comments from board members? Yes, Eric.
I'm assuming we still want these to be just standing reports, blank, if I've got something, and maybe next time around we'll have a little bit to report on here, but I'm assuming we just want to keep these on as placeholders every time in case new information comes up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric. That concludes item C3. Moving on to item D, new business. Item D1, selection of two Harbor Advisory Board members to sit on the selection panel to review the request for proposals received for the redevelopment of lease site. I'll just call it the Morro Bay Aquarium lease site. Eric, would you please introduce this subject to us?
Yeah, hopefully it's not a subject that's foreign. As you know, through quite a bit of a process, starting, I guess, back in 2013, maybe in 2012, the Morro Bay Aquarium was coming up for expiration on that lease in 2018. And the question became, do we negotiate with existing leaseholders or put it out for public RFP? We went through the Harbor Advisory Board, I think once, maybe twice. Eventually, ended up, City Council direction was to put it out for request for proposals, to put it out to the public to see if we can get any proposals on that lease site. We did put out the RFP in June, or the council approved it in June 2013, the issuance of the RFP. We had taken previous RFPs from a couple of other lease sites and looked at, Laura and I looked at some from some other cities, put together an RFP. Council left it largely intact. They did direct some changes into the review panel process, one of which was assigning, I think, two seats to City Council, two to Harbor Advisory Board members, a few from the public, and a couple from staff. So they did want a fairly specific panel. That RFP was due April 15th. One entity that we know, the Central Coast Aquarium, that we believe is, I still think they are, it appears that they're going to submit a proposal. They requested a deadline extension. We gave them 6 months, which is August 15th, coming right up, to allow them more time. And that time's coming up, so we're just kind of starting to get things in place and looking at panel members, potential panel members.
You said August 15th.
What did I say?
You said August 15th.
Oh, sorry.
I think you meant October.
October 15th, it's due. So we're just getting ahead of the game, or at least keeping up with the game, and coming to the advisory board now since we meet monthly. We'd like to have two possible members, if you can select among yourselves, two that would like to serve on that RFP review process. We put the RFP into the staff report just so you can have a look at it and see what the criteria and parameters are. And hopefully we can select two folks, and then assuming we get a proposal, we'll bring it back to council for their folks that they want to assign and continue on with the review process.
Thank you, Eric. So what I'll do first off is ask for volunteers for this. I know that Gene expressed an interest to me before he left that he would like to sit on that selection panel. I would be interested in sitting on that selection panel. But before I even move on, here's how I'd like to work it. There's two people that have expressed interest. I'll ask if there's anyone else that has an interest in it, and if there is anyone else, then we can talk about it a little bit and take a vote, because I'd like it to be the board's will on that. So is there anyone else that would like to sit on that selection committee?
I'm good.
Okay.
I do too.
It's kind of like the thing where everybody else steps back and leaves right. The two people up front. Well, that was easy then. So by default.
Yeah.
Let me throw out the reasoning too. Gene has a lot of practical experience and a lot of design experience. I have a financial background and some contract and lease negotiation experience as well. So I think the two of us bring valuable information coming from two different directions to the selection committee. So good. So everybody's okay then with those two? Why don't we we should do a vote for those two. So
I nominate Gene and Jeff to serve on the committee for evaluation of lease sites.
And I think, you know, this is something else that may not go anywhere, but I feel it incumbent upon myself as a board member representing the public to our council. This is an important issue to apparently a number of folks out there in the harbor. So I would like to bring up as a future agenda item the issue of MSDs and sewage dumping into the harbor by non-liveaboard vessels, non-permitted liveaboard vessels. Is there anyone else? We need three people to. Okay, so we've got three folks on that one, so we can put that on the future agenda item list. And Eric had mentioned earlier that he might want to even look at some things on that on his own. So I don't know how we want to time that moving forward. Your input on that, Eric?
So that's non-living board vessel.
Correct.
Okay, you've kind of.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's getting late. I'm starting to slur a little. Yeah, I slowed down because I wanted to make sure I got a non-permitted liveaboard vessels.
All vessels. Everything other than liveaboard. We do have some vessels that are, and they are current ongoing enforcement challenges. We do have a small list of vessels that are being used as liveaboards. They are, by definition, non-permitted vessels. But I don't think that's what you're getting at. You're getting at Drew's other 470 boats.
Right.
Okay. I'm just going to say non-liveaboard. I mean, assuming perfect compliance and we had 100% compliance, we would have all permitted liveaboards. There's going to be some non-permitted always, but it's everybody else you're talking about.
Right. Correct.
And the issue really, I think, starts fundamentally with sewage discharge from vessels into Morro Bay, period, irrespective of the type or nature or whatever the vessel is.
Okay.
Because there seems to be some ambiguity in the city's own ordinances as to whether their discharge is okay or not okay. And then you've got water quality regs and state regs, and you got federal regs. So,
okay, so I'll,
no, I like
so
your
yeah,
item.
Yeah, no, so but I'll back up a little, and all vessels is what we're looking at, and that may just be, Eric, that for the permitted vessels, we feel that there's sufficient oversight or enforcement already. It could be addressed that easily, but yeah. I agree. Let's start with the big tent and work our way down. Is that good with you too? Okay.
Here. An item that is coming back around, State Park Marinas. You know, we've heard that a few times in the operating agreement. We did meet with State Parks, the city attorney and I, a few weeks ago, and they have a study, and they're ready to. Their desire is to do a public review of that document and their possible three directions that they think they may want to go in order to continue on with the State Park Marina dredging and repair and maintenance and all that. And they'd like to do that publicly, and they'd like to do that. We all concluded that the Harbor Advisory Board would probably be a good venue for that as a first blush public process to look at that and see where we want to go. And then council, I think, wants it by the end of the year. But if we've got this tag going to the Harbor Advisory Board, that may push it back a little bit. Parks druthers are to get something first public meeting prior to mid to end of February. Understanding that we meet once a month and don't meet in January, could potentially do a call for a special meeting in January if we thought we had to go there. I guess we can look at that towards later in December, but I'd be looking to put that on. I don't know if it'll be written up by November, but maybe December. So we'll hear that one, which is a future agenda now, so I just want to throw that out there. That's going to be a pretty meaty item, I would imagine.
Yeah, good.
I think we got a lot on the agenda.
Yeah, we do.
So I don't think we need to add anything.
Well, thank you for that, Bill. returning to democracy, is there anyone else that has a suggestion? It's getting late. Okay, I don't see any other declaration of future agenda items. Anything else from Eric or Polly with regard to the ordering of the future agenda items? Anything else with regard to that? Okay. And Gene's not here for me to move to adjourn. Oh, adjourn, is there a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor? All right, this meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.